Welcome to the Get Over Yourself podcast. This is author and athlete Brad Kearns discovering ways to be healthy, fit, and happy in hectic, high-stress modern life. So let's slow down and take a deep breath, take a cold plunge, and expertly balance that competitive intensity with an appreciation of the journey. That's the theme of the show. Here we go.
People are often exposed to these messages, which is that fasting is really important, carbs cause diabetes, protein causes cancer, and actually the protein causes cancer group are slowly rolling back on that, which I guess I'm not surprised by. Like, you talk to an athlete, they're like, what's breakfast? Like, I have half an avocado and a couple of eggs. And I'm just like, that's not breakfast. Like, six eggs minimum, eat the whole avocado, like, come on. Or, you know, somebody's making their smoothie, they put in half a banana. Put the whole banana in the smoothie, like, come on. You know, the plant-based guys are definitely onto something. If you're eating very low fat and it's real food, you know, mainly vegetables and beans and things like that, and potatoes and maybe some rice, and then, you know, the keto guys are, you know, are slowly losing the plot as I talk about this, but, you know, there's no fat in the diet for you to store, and you're also not getting these large insulin spikes because you're eating normal, unprocessed carbohydrates.
Let us give thanks to the show sponsors. These are great products and services. Check them out. It's so difficult to make the cut. AlmostHeaven.com for beautiful compact home use sauna kits. AncestralSupplements.com for grass-fed organ meats in a capsule. Easy. DNAFit.com. Genetic testing delivering comprehensive diet and exercise recommendations. WildIdea.com. Grass-fed, sustainable buffalo, beyond organic. And the Primal Blueprint online multimedia mastery courses. I'm your host. Learn more at the links on my homepage, bradkearns.com. I also have a new button called Shopping with Brad for other cool stuff at bradkearns.com. And here we go with the show. Hi, Brad Kearns. Happy to introduce show number two with Dr. Tommy Wood. Go back and listen to the first one. And if you don't feel like it, listen to this one. How about that? Should I pretend this was two different days that we got together and podcasted? I don't know. What happened was we got on a roll, man, and we were going for a long time. So I decided to break it into two shows. We had a nice break. And so I faked the exit and the intro to the next show after the fact. I think you're going to enjoy how seamless the transition is. Hey, man, that's the world of podcasting. We're just trying to make it right for you. Anyway, in this show, he talks about how gut dysfunction is such a bad deal and a common deal for athletes, and the additional stress and risk of gut dysfunction that happens when you're carbohydrate dependent because you're compelled to slam down all these calories while you're training, which is not a good time, or in and around training. Your digestive system takes a lot of beating, especially when you're doing impact stuff like running. We also talk about my successful experiment of increasing my caloric intake of healthy, nutritious calories, such as the Super Nutrition Morning Green Smoothie. So go look for that on YouTube. I'll show you all the powders and cool stuff I put in there, as well as the nutritious greens, a concentrated dose of energy and nutrition to start my day, kind of pairing that with a typical routine of fasting and eating in a ketogenic pattern. So mixing and matching for me seems to be working really well, and Tommy talks about the effectiveness of perhaps targeting your carbohydrate intake around your athletic efforts, around your high calorie burning efforts, if you're the athletic type, and continuing on those types of discussion patterns about the various matters of the day and the controversies and the conflict out there. He's kind of getting us settled and talking in a reasonable, practical manner of what works and what's BS. And he has no problem calling out nonsense and giving us reasonable insights to keep us calibrated. One of the things he talked about was the often touted benefits of autophagy. That's the natural cellular detoxification process that occurs when you're not overfeeding yourself constantly all day long for your entire life, but you in fact engage in fasting or depleting workouts and making that important point that you can access these autophagy benefits from both fasting and from doing hard workouts. So be careful when you're pairing those two together, because you want to make sure you don't have a rebound effect whereby you do a hard workout, you fast, and then 24 to 36 hours later, you kind of feel an energy lull because your body has ways of compensating. And I'm telling you this in the intro because this happened to me. We covered it a little bit in the show, but I want to emphasize the importance of listening and having an open mind and not being afraid of nutritious carbs and nothing to go against your ketogenic efforts, because the benefits there are profound, but doing it in a healthy, sensible manner and making necessary adjustments for your athletic peak performance goals. We end this show with a beautiful top five tips for living healthy, where Tommy offers some great color commentary on number one, sleeping, number two, moving more, number three, reducing stress, number four, socializing, and number five, eating real food. And the show moves pretty quickly. Sometimes some science is dropped in. So if it gets a little complex at times, listen to my recording where I deconstruct both Tommy shows and just add additional insights and explanations so that you can maximize your appreciation of this wealth of knowledge, this guy on the cutting edge of science, but also having that beautiful observation to live a healthy, balanced, simple life. Dr. Tommy Wood in the Seattle, Washington area. Enjoy show number two.
So you mentioned that if you're good at burning fat, fat and keto adapted, we call it, you can replenish glycogen without even eating a big carbohydrate meal. This is kind of what came out of the FASTER study.
Exactly.
And how did they do that? How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've had a bit of email discussion with Steve Finney about this too at one point. And there's probably three different ways that it happens. The first one is those guys generate a lot more lactate than carbohydrate-based or carbohydrate-dominant athletes during exercise. So that lactate will get converted back to glucose in the liver via the Cori cycle, and then that can go back as glycogen. You can also get, you can convert glycerol from the breakdown of fats in, you know, that can be converted into glucose, that could go back as glycogen. And then also acetone has a route back through, you know, rather than, you know, acetone is the ketone body that we think that we breathe out. There's also a route back to a glucose production from acetone. And it's not that much. It might be like 5 to 10%, but it's probably going to contribute too. So there are actually multiple ways that the keto adapted athlete can make glucose and store it as glycogen, which is what the FAST study showed, without taking in any glucose.
Now, is it true that we don't need this completely maxed out glycogen tank if we're good at burning fat and we have an optimal diet where we're not reliant upon dietary carbohydrates as our main source of energy?
So the answer is we don't know. Because there's been no study that has actually shown a performance benefit of a ketogenic diet or a low carb diet, you know, in the long term. So the FASTER study didn't show a performance benefit. They just looked at, you know, how, you know, the metabolic underpinnings of what was happening in those guys. There have been some recent studies on cyclists that looked at, I think it was a 10-week ketogenic diet in pretty high level cyclists. And, you know, some guys, when they did a time trial, some guys, their performance got worse. A couple of guys, their performance stayed about the same. One guy, his VO2 max went up. So it's really, really, it seems to be really, really individual how you'll respond to that. So whether if you're, you know, truly keto adapted and a calorie replete, you know, when you go low carb and you're doing a huge volume of exercise, we certainly see that it's very common for people to undereat. They're just not getting in enough calories because you're less hungry, plus you're doing all this exercise, which may make you less hungry, and then you just don't eat enough. So in that state, it's potentially possible that you'll perform just as well. But equally, if we look at the body of research that seems to suggest that having, you know, filling the glycogen stores for a long endurance race seems to be produce a benefit in terms of exercise, but again, in terms of performance, but again, that's just in those guys who are already eating a high carbohydrate diet. So right, yeah, that's the long way for me to say, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a book full of studies.
Yeah.
Lore of Running has many of those references that Tim Noakes theatrically tore out, because now things are referencing differently. But I'm curious too, like if you're walking around and you're 7 pounds lighter because you went keto, is a lot of that just less glycogen storage because you're not deathly reliant upon it all the time?
Well, up to a certain point, and you know, you often say like the early weight that you might lose on a low carb ketogenic diet is associated with reduction in glycogen stores, which comes with a lot of water. However, again, if you go back to the FASTA study, those guys didn't have less glycogen in their muscle tissue. They had just as much and they replenished it just as fast after exercise via all those pathways we just talked about. So there's, you know, if you're losing weight long-term on keto, is probably improved metabolic health, you know, reduced calorie intake, all that kind of stuff. Increased protein intake, again, can be very beneficial. Mm. So yes, I think there'll be some short-term glycogen loss, but then there seems to be an adaptation that then allows that to come back, particularly if you're an athlete, because, you know, you're going to need it. It's certainly an important part of performance.
This is heading me to my wonderful experiment that I started at your behest on September of 2017. So it's almost a year now, uh-huh, where we're looking at my profile. And again, this is an individual discussion of what's best for me. But I reported that, you know, well into keto, enjoying my fasting periods where I feel productive, focused, stable mood, energy, cognitive function, and waiting until 12 or 1 to eat my first meal, and then going on and never really experiencing these hunger spikes that we're so used to enduring throughout our life. But then I have these athletic goals. I'm an old guy doing crazy shit still and trying to recover at the 50 plus category. And you made this speculation that maybe I should try to consume a higher number of nutritious calories, mm-hmm, to fuel my efforts rather than sort of be, you know, obsessed with how calorically efficient can I become? How little food do I need because my appetite is so regulated with keto? Yeah. And so I said, okay, I'll try it. And I started getting into that morning green smoothie, which is now a viral YouTube video. Not really, but if you go watch it and tell everybody, and I'm putting all this stuff in there, all the greens. So I'm getting a good dose of greens and macronutrient balance. So I'm getting the fat sources like MCT oil and coconut milk base, not just a big sugar thing, you know, mm-hmm, very little fruit, but drinking this thing in the morning as a complete turnaround from this longer period of fasting. So how do we reconcile some of these messages that we're being bombed with, such as fasting's great, the more fasting you, the shorter eating window, the better you get autophagy, that's the cell detoxification repair, versus someone who maybe wants to feel better, perform better, maybe in a different category of metabolic function?
Yeah, there's so many important things in there. I think fasting certainly a useful tool to have in the toolbox as part of a longevity strategy. However, I think it's worth pointing out that what happens in most of the guys or many of the guys that we work with, and you would certainly be an example of that, is that the combination of low carb, lower calorie, and you know, people are often exposed to these messages, which is that fasting is really important. Carbs cause diabetes, protein causes cancer. And actually the protein causes cancer group are slowly rolling back on that, which I guess I'm not surprised by. But if you combine all of that with like a high level of exercise, you've got low caloric intake plus high caloric output. And at some point, you know, that really is liquidating your assets. You're asking your body to do something that it's not designed to do, and then you're not giving it the things that it needs to recover from it. So when we talk to people about this, we basically tell them that they should, you know, particularly if they have a performance goal and they don't, and there's no issues with body composition, we tell them they should be eating as much as possible without gaining weight. Because there's this
Did you say ice cream, Tommy?
I did. So
you make these quips about ice. You've said it like a couple times in our past conversations, maybe on the podcast.
Yeah.
Ice cream. And then here we are in Seattle, and I go to Frankie and Joe's vegan ice cream the other night, and there's ice cream everywhere, these super healthy natural ice creams. It's like incredible. So I had to interrupt you there. Yeah. The ice cream's allowed in certain circumstances and parameters.
So I did actually say ice cream in my talk at AHS too.
Oh, he likes that. He's an ice cream guy. Have you been to that place, Frankie and Joe's, with the vegan ice cream?
No, I haven't been to Frankie and Joe's. There are some other great places in Molly Moon's is a staple in Seattle, which is great. And then Salt and Straw was a Portland-based ice cream place, which now has a couple of stores
here
in Seattle.
Yeah. This show is sponsored by Frankie and Joe's Salt and Straw, and our payment is free ice cream for Brad and Tommy.
Yeah, please. We'll need to let them know we talked about them. So I think sometimes, and you know, ice cream isn't the perfect example because it's not nutrient dense. It's very easy to overeat. You know, all that kind of stuff is the perfect combination of carbohydrate and fat, which is, you know, is going to, you know, promote, storage as fat. If, you know, you don't introduce it at the right time, but just sometimes, you need to get a lot of calories in and you need to eat. Sometimes you need to eat calorie dense foods. And you also need to accept that, you know, maybe your performance is more important in the short term, and what your performance requires is calorie dense foods that perhaps are not optimal for health. But if you're prioritizing performance, you're probably prioritizing performance at the absence of health. At least, you know, there's a balance that's happening there. And, you know, you just need to realize that if you're doing this kind of exercise, you or this volume of training, you're going to need to fuel it. And sometimes you just need to eat calorie dense foods to do that. There are obviously better and worse ways to do that. But, you know, sometimes a scoop of ice cream certainly isn't a bad thing to do. But, you know, if we go back to what you were talking about, you know, so say autophagy, you know, people are like, oh, we need to fast long periods for autophagy. Actually, the best way to activate autophagy, particularly in the muscle, is to do endurance exercise. Mm-hmm. So you can, there's a really interesting study where they had guys fast overnight. I think it was 16 hours. They looked at levels of autophagy in the muscles, and there was no autophagy happening whatsoever after 16 hours of fasting. But then they got on to ride a bike for an hour, and you know, all the autophagy pathways were upregulated. So if you're an endurance athlete and you're doing regular aerobic exercise, you're already activating those pathways. So you know, I think, you know, periods, like I said, there's definitely some benefit to periods of carb restriction. You know, some fasted workouts, you know, all that stuff is great. But equally, there's a big potential detriment that can happen if you're trying to combine fasting with high volumes of exercise, because you're just going to end up in a caloric deficit, which is going to, you know, great, you might have a lot more autophagy going on, but you'll have a lot less testosterone going on, and you'll have a lot less thyroid hormone and all this other stuff. So, you know, again, it's going to be a balance of what's really going to be beneficial in the long term.
Well, you mentioned this total energy expenditure with the Hadza, and I mm-hmm. thought that was a mind-blowing insight that they're finding these super active hunter-gatherer dudes are not burning more calories than the average modern person.
Yeah.
And so we come up against this maximum, and if we're doing these crazy workouts today, we compensate by burning less energy at rest. And they call it the compensation theory of exercise, where you're going to make adjustments by eating more and being more lazy because you did your 5 a.m. spinning class.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a mind blower to me, because I realized what happened with me, I believe, was I was doing the keto thing. I didn't count my calories, but it was probably lower than my historical average, especially compared to eating that high carbohydrate diet in years past, but I was getting by on fewer calories and still trying to go hit the workouts and doing fairly well in the workouts. I wasn't complaining like I was off the back and unable to finish my high jump session. But then as a consequence, I think I was experiencing less energy at rest because I was compensating for the energy that I summoned to do the workout and then not stuff my face afterward with Frankie and Joe's Molly Moon and the other one.
Yeah.
Or even some healthy food.
Awesome healthy foods, which we definitely encourage. And, you know, the nature of the smoothie you mentioned, you know, people might have issues with raw green vegetables or, you know, whatever. You can put whatever you want in that, you know, to make it like a nutrient dense whole foods sort of calorie rich smoothie. That's what we use with a lot of people. And
I'm so excited to introduce you to Paluva. This is a new zero-drop minimalist shoe with the distinctive five-toe design from my main man, Mark Sisson. Paluvas give you the most authentic barefoot-style experience, but with sufficient cushioning so you can use them for all manner of daily movement, especially walking and many other fitness and athletic activities. Paluvas are also incredibly stylish, so you get a barefoot shoe that you're not embarrassed to wear around in daily life. It's been so cool to see the popularity of minimalist shoes grow over the recent years, but Paluvas are a step ahead of every other zero-drop wide-box shoe because of the critical feature of individual five-toe articulation, a separate slot for each of your toes. This allows for correct dynamic movement of the foot through the walking or running stride, which is impossible when your toes are encased into a single box, even a wide box. Well, you might know that minimalist shoes have faced controversy in recent years for causing injuries from inappropriate use. So here is the big picture mission. We want to get you walking in Paluvas, living in your Paluvas, going barefoot in your home or other safe areas as often as possible. Go ahead and use your specialized cushiony running shoes or your basketball shoes, work boots, high heels, things that you want to wear when you want to wear them, but wear your Paluvas as much as possible to reawaken the natural functionality of the human foot to stand, walk, run, and perform. Do you want to try a pair? I'm certain that when you put them on and walk around, you are going to quickly realize that these are the most comfortable natural shoes that you've ever worn. They are designed to feel like you're, quote, walking barefoot on a putting green. Please visit Paluva.com, that's P-E-L-U-V-A, and use the code BRADPODCAST and get 10% off your first pair. Paluvas, let your feet be feet. Hey ladies! You may have heard me talk about Gaines Wave treatment for improving male penile vascular health and sexual function, and maybe you thought, hey, what about my needs? Well, Gaines Wave has got you covered with a revolutionary new treatment protocol called Gaines Wave for Her. As with the male Gaines Wave treatment, a skilled practitioner uses a handheld device to send low-intensity shock waves into your vaginal area to stimulate a healing response, promote increased blood circulation, and the growth of new blood vessels. After a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results with Gaines Wave reporting an 80% success rate. Some benefits. You will revitalize your intimate relationships with heightened sensation and arousal and enhanced pleasure and satisfaction. Don't contemplate invasive procedures or uncomfortable medical treatments. Regain confidence and reclaim your sexuality with Gaines Wave for Her. You visit the website gainswave.com, GAINSWAVE.com/Brad, to find a practitioner in your area. You complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, so please visit gainswave.com/Brad to find a practitioner in your area and take advantage of my special promo that you'll mention when you find your local practitioner. Buy 6 treatments and get one free.
What kind of issues are you going to get with the raw green vegetables?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if some of the, I get a little bloated sometimes after drinking this thing.
Yeah. I think particularly if you're somebody who has a tendency towards gut issues, there may be some fibers and things in there that might be preferentially metabolized by the gut microbiota, which can then end up with some bloating and gas. And, you know, some people have some issues with, say, oxalates, which are present in nuts and in green leafy vegetables. So if you have a lot of those in your smoothies, and again, it's not common, but it can happen. So it's just worth bearing in mind that sometimes if you put a lot of this stuff in and you don't feel great, you know, it's worth maybe adjusting the recipe there. But yeah, there's the thing you mentioned in terms of the adaptation. Yeah, what we start with doing is reducing. So if we increase our activity in terms of exercise, we reduce the amount, we reduce our energy expenditure elsewhere. So it's like more time sitting down, less time fidgeting, just all this kind of movement that we do the rest of the time just gets essentially turned off to save energy. And then there's this other bit which hasn't been well studied, but I'm certain that it happens, where you start to then reduce the energy that's going towards other processes. So it can be repairing the gut, or you know, hormonal signaling, or all this stuff. So you keep on turning down all these other things in order to pay for the exercise that you're doing, because you're not providing the calories to fuel it. And I know there's been, you know, similarly, there's been this big thing in terms of fuel efficiency. You know, you go keto, I'm much more efficient with my calories. I'm still yet to be convinced that that's a good thing, because there's plenty of research from animals, and then also some from humans, that suggests that those who have higher metabolic rates for their given size, for their body weight, may actually live longer. So if we're thinking about, I need to be really efficient, I need to, you know, have low energy expenditure, or I need fewer calories to do what I'm doing, In terms of the research that's out there, or at least it's enough for me to say, I'm not sure that's a good thing. Uh-huh. So, you know,
Tommy, don't mess around. you shoot straight. I like that. I mean, if there's something to call out and say, wait a second, because some of this stuff is now getting integrated into the new, exciting, evolved conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
And it's not going, it's passing without a second thought, because what we had before was bullshit that you're supposed to live on carbs. That's nonsense. Now go keto, and it's the solution to everything. But the juxtaposition there is interesting. And I know there's research saying that an athletic person burns fewer calories at rest than a sedentary person. Is that so?
So you have to do that in order to create that compensatory mechanism that we talked about. And it's what they particularly show is that it's the other activity that people do, the non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So again, it's all that stuff that you do that you don't really think of as exercise, all the movements and fidgeting and that kind of stuff. So that gets turned down in order to pay for the exercise. However, I think, and this is partly a hypothesis on my part, just because I don't think anybody's really looked at really, you know, and done these same studies in really high volume athletes who are calorie restricted. But that's a lot of the guys that we see.
That's a common problem?
It's a common problem for us.
For Nurse Balance Thrive.
And we have a very specific population, but it is people who have come from some of the, you know, the low carb or keto space, or the paleo or primal space, and they're still trying to do these modern sports and train 2 or 3 hours a day whilst eating a much less calorie dense diet. And at some point, those things just don't match up. And particularly if there's phobia about certain macronutrients, and at the moment there seems to be phobia about all macronutrients, depending on where you go. So there's the further end of the scale. So the basal metabolic rate is supposed to stay the same regardless of your fat, you know, just in linearly with your fat-free mass. So the amount of muscle tissue and your organs and things like that. And so the more of that you have, the more your basal metabolic rate. But I think that's going to start to come down as you then ask the body to do more. And we see that the thyroid hormone comes down, which is basically your thermostat. So you can see the body saying, you're asking me to output so much energy during my exercise that I'm just going to have to turn down the thermostat, because I can't keep everything else going at the same rate. So this isn't, you know, we don't have a lot of great papers discussing this, but that's certainly what we see in the biochemistry when we test the athletes.
You guys mentioned that to me. You or Chris, looking at my thyroid on the low normal range, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, you do a lot of exercise in your keto. That's routinely seen.
Yeah,
which is things to rethink maybe. So I don't know. Something happened on September 1st, 2017. I started hitting the calories hard. And so, you know, the green smoothie opened the door to more frequent popcorn binges in the evening. And of course, making that critical distinction, like we're talking about increasing your intake of nutritious calories, mm-hmm. not eating more calories. And that's why I choose the finest ice cream stores in Seattle. Some of these ingredients, man, it was, you know, it's like ground up cashew nuts because it's vegan.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looked pretty clean. And they're throwing in kale was one of the flavors. And I had salty caramel ash. And so it was dark black. Look on my Instagram. You'll see a picture of it. But it was dark black because it had activated charcoal in the ice cream.
Okay. Yeah.
So maybe if it was bad, it's cleaning me out, I guess, at the same time. But I started to notice better recovery after the workouts. I'm not going to say better performance because I hate when athletes say that, like, really, dude, you took 3 pills beforehand or you took 20 grams of carbs 20 minutes before your workout and you had better performance. Give me a break. But I noticed I would bounce back from these sprint workouts with less soreness and being able to go again later. And believe me, I'm patient and I'm not pushing it. So I was just making this observation, like, I guess my body is liking more nutritious calories to the extent that I'm not going to be looking at myself adding body fat and continuing down some crazy path.
Yeah.
Of course, that didn't happen. It seems it would be hard to happen anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible if the
really listen hard and go, Dr. Tommy Wood said to eat 4 servings of this.
But yeah. That I could eat all this ice cream and it would make me go faster. Yeah. So
I scared the dog with that high voice. So excuse me, Bowen.
It's certainly possible to do it the wrong way. But in general, if you approach it, you keep the diet at least fairly similar. And most of the guys we work with are actually eating really well. Like, you look at their diet, like, this is great. There's just not enough of it. They just need you to eat more. Like, you talk to an athlete, they're like, what's breakfast? Like, I have half an avocado and a couple of eggs. And I'm just like, that's not breakfast. Like, 6 eggs minimum, eat the whole avocado. Like, come on. Or, somebody's making their smoothie, they put in half a banana, put the whole banana in the smoothie. Like, come on. Especially when, these people need 3, 4, 5, 6,000 calories a day, that banana is it's very unlikely to be detrimental. And, it's very likely that you just need those carbohydrates and you need those calories.
Do we have a way of adjusting our thermogenesis or what have you to maintain a stable body composition, even if we double our calories, to make an extreme example? I'm talking about the athletic person who is making that effort and having these nutritious meals and then going and performing. Maybe they're doing their workouts and their leg is fidgeting more at work and they're more generally active.
Yeah. So there's two parts to that. There's when there are people who want to lose body fat, but they're already exercising a lot and they're turning down that extra activity, you can kind of force it if you need to, right? And it's not something we recommend, but you can do it. Like, you can make yourself walk a lot more and sort of keep it up if you need to kind of adjust that. That's, again, it's rare for us and it's not something we recommend. So, but if you think about, say, you double your calories, there's a lot of evidence that shows that you will dramatically increase thermogenesis for a number of reasons. So the thermogenesis based on a meal increases with the number of calories in it. So the more that you eat, the more thermogenesis goes on. And this was kind of, you remember they used to say that you should eat like 6 small meals a day because that will like keep your metabolism going. That's nonsense, because if you ate those 6 meals as one meal, you just get 6 times as much thermogenesis from that one meal and it all evens out. So
even is there any time of day consideration there where we also hear don't eat before bed because you'll store that as fat?
Yeah, eating before bed because you'll store it as fat. It's not something I really worry about. There's certainly going to be some benefit, again, restricting the window too much on either side for somebody who has a high calorie demand, it can be detrimental. However, most of the metabolic processes associated with digesting food and processing nutrients, you seem to be better at it earlier in the day. So you're more insulin sensitive in the morning. You're more responsive to carbohydrates in the morning. If you eat earlier in the day, then you have your lower glucose spikes to carbohydrates later in the day. So when you have a single large meal at night, say, that's probably the worst time to do things, because your body isn't really primed to do it. If your melatonin started to go up, that interferes with insulin signaling, so you're going to have much higher glucose spikes. So the longer you wait in the day to eat, usually, you know, sort of the worst metabolic responses you get to food, and it's exacerbated in people who already have metabolic disease, so people with type 2 diabetes. And people, so they've done studies where people with type 2 diabetes, they're either given carbohydrates in the morning or in the evening, they get a much better blood sugar response if they eat in the morning rather than the evening. So I would prefer people to eat more of their calories earlier in the day if they can.
A giant six small meals in one. Six eggs and a whole avocado for starters.
Yeah, six eggs and a whole avocado is just a small breakfast. But we do increase thermogenesis in response to the amount of food that we eat. But there are some really great studies looking at, say, particularly carbohydrates. If somebody is on a pure carbohydrate diet, or, you know, the vast majority of the calories come from carbohydrate, you will keep on basically increasing metabolism to try and burn that off until you're eating like thousands of calories extra of carbohydrates a day. And then you might start to get some de novo lipogenesis and store it as fat. The issue with carbohydrates and insulin and fat storage in obesity is the fact that the carbohydrates and the insulin make you store the fat that's in your food. So if you ate a super, super low fat diet, it's actually really hard to turn those carbohydrates into fat. And again, in the keto low carb space, that is like all those carbs get stored as fat, and it's just not true. If you're eating a pure carb, like pure carbohydrate diet, you have to eat thousands of extra calories a day to start to get significant fat storage. So, because the body tries to compensate, you just like see an increase in metabolic rate as it just tries to burn that stuff off. So that's, you know, you will, again, that's that whole part of the buffer. It's part of the adaptation. You can eat a lot more calories than you think, and you will, you know, first you'll start to use them for beneficial processes like repairing things that you weren't repairing before, or, you know, your body's saying, okay, I can have normal hormonal function now because I'm not calorie deprived anymore. And then you'll start to increase metabolism. So things like tracking basal temperature, tracking your temperature in the morning, you can just start to see that increase over time. And we definitely have guys, and it's not so like a one-off measurement doesn't necessarily tell you anything. It's kind of like heart rate variability. You kind of need to track trends over time, but you can certainly start to see that increase over time as hormonal function improves, thyroid function improves, just because they're eating more food.
So really, it's the joining of fat and carbs in terms of people concerned with adding excess body fat, which is almost everyone, and especially as the years go by.
Yeah.
It's the joint ingestion of carbs and fat that's really getting to us.
Yeah, exactly. So when people worry about, you know, there's two sides of the obesity debate. There's the calorie side, and then there's the carbohydrate insulin hypothesis side, and they're kind of both right to an extent. Like neither is 100% right and neither is 100% wrong. But if you look at the body fat of people, the body fat composition is almost the same as the dietary fat composition. So it's just the fat that you're eating is what's going on your ass, but it's all the like the large insulin spikes of the other stuff you're consuming with the fat that's preferentially making that be stored. So, and again, like the total calorie balance and all this other stuff is important too, but it's not just the carbs that are making you fat. It's the fat in the diet that's getting stored. And then it's just the nature of the carbohydrates you're eating with it, particularly if they're refined and there's a large glucose spike, there's a large insulin spike, and then it's causing storage, but it's not causing storage of those carbs. It's preferentially causing storage of the fat that you eat.
Trip out on that, man. That's crazy. So could there be a strategy where you're going to eat your carbs at a certain time of day away from a fat that you're going to eat at another time of day?
Like yeah, so
a fatty breakfast, and then you can enjoy your sweet potatoes and popcorn at night.
Yeah, so that's certainly been...
Thank you, Tommy. That's great news. Oh, excuse me. Tell me more, Tommy.
That's definitely been done with some success before. So if you think about kefirs, carb backloading, carb night, where so in carb backloading, you'd eat low carb during the day, but it was actually preferentially really high protein. So it was like vast amounts of protein, and then your carbohydrates would be at night. However, I would probably switch that the other way around, because insulin sensitivity is better in the morning. Blood glucose responses to a carbohydrate-based meal are better earlier in the day. So you're probably going to be better off having your, you know, if you're going to try and separate those out, stack your carbs in the morning, say like carbs and protein at one end and then fat and protein at the other end. However, you know, when people aren't that metabolically healthy or for whatever reason, they might get like those slumps after carbohydrates. So like, it's definitely shades of gray. And like when we're talking about carbohydrates in a meal, for many athletes, and we're talking about adding back carbs, I'm talking like for a glycolytic sport, and around workouts, it's like 1 gram per pound of body weight. For an endurance, a high volume endurance athlete, it might be 2 to 3 grams per pound of body weight. Like, it's not huge amounts of carbohydrate, right? Well,
that's a fair amount.
Well, it's a fair amount if you come from the low
total
carb
body weight or lean body weight.
So I just go off if somebody's, you know, somewhere between 10 and 20% body fat, then I just go off total body weight. If you're, you know, obese, you know, have a very high BMI, then you might adjust down based on body fat levels. But if you think about the amount of carbohydrate that those guys would traditionally be told to take, so you're talking about maybe 6 grams per pound, and I'm saying, you know, maybe 2 grams per pound. So it's
for
much,
the whole day. You're
for
talking
the
about.
Over a whole day.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah. So
not much.
So it's we're adding back what's a significant amount of carbohydrate if you're a low carb or keto person, but it's still not very much compared to like traditional endurance athletics nutrition. But you know, that's definitely enough to see a benefit.
Especially if you're healthy, it's
yeah. And if you're metabolically healthy, you should be able to tolerate all of this. You should be able to have a large carbohydrate bolus, a large fat bolus, a large protein bolus, all of that gets metabolized nicely and just goes through. So like that's the marker of somebody who has good metabolic health is being able to tolerate these foods.
So we got to let you go. I appreciate so much this great show. It's fast moving. We're going to have to do some Googling. But here at the end, why don't you tell me with your clients, what is really working? What are the big changes that you're getting the most results from?
So I think the most important thing that we've figured out is that knowing the answer is often the easy part. So, and like that, I don't mean that in like an arrogant sense. I mean, it's often going to be something like changing the training program, changing the diet. You know, maybe there needs to be some supplementation. Maybe there needs to be, you know, we need to do a gut protocol to treat something that's going on there. Maybe they need to go to their doctor and get a medication. You know, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes it happens. So the answer isn't the hard part. It's creating new habits. It's creating behavior changes, getting people to do stuff that is going to be beneficial to them in the long term. You know, creating movement habits, say, training habits that are going to be something you can do for decades to come, or creating dietary habits that you can do for decades to come rather than just being a quick fix kind of thing. So,
hey, ladies, you may have heard me talk about Gaines Wave treatment for improving male penile vascular health and sexual function, and maybe you thought, hey, what about my needs? Well, Gaines Wave has got you covered with a revolutionary new treatment protocol called Gaines Wave for Her. As with the male Gainswave treatment, a skilled practitioner uses a handheld device to send low-intensity shock waves into your vaginal area to stimulate a healing response, promote increased blood circulation, and the growth of new blood vessels. After a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results with Gainswave reporting an 80% success rate. Some benefits. You will revitalize your intimate relationships with heightened sensation and arousal and enhanced pleasure and satisfaction. Don't contemplate invasive procedures or uncomfortable medical treatments. Regain confidence and reclaim your sexuality with Gaines Wave for Her. You visit the website gainswave.com, GAINSWAVE.com/Brad, to find a practitioner in your area. You complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, so please visit gainswave.com/Brad to find a practitioner in your area and take advantage of my special promo that you'll mention when you find your local practitioner. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. Greetings, my fitness-minded listeners. I want to acquaint you with the Primal Fitness Expert Certification Program, the most comprehensive home study multimedia fitness education course in the world. If you want to enhance your personal knowledge of all aspects of leading a healthy, active, fit lifestyle, this total immersion course will be life-changing. I'm the lead instructor and author of the course, and we have 14 chapters of extensive written content with over 100 accompanying videos covering topics such as general everyday movement, including micro workouts and dynamic workstation tips, the full experience of gym-based strength training and all the different modalities, a complete presentation on all aspects of sprinting, both running and low impact options, an assortment of high intensity interval training and high intensity repeat training strategies, a detailed education on the principles and practical application of aerobic endurance training, and extensive commentary, the most you will find in any publication, on all aspects and symptoms of overtraining and burnout. We even have fascinating peripheral topics like integrating nasal diaphragmatic breathing, dynamic stretching, injury prevention, and developing a peak performance mindset. It's really something, this course. We went all out for over 2 years with a great team to develop this amazing home-based fitness education for you. And you get one-on-one expert email support and private Facebook group connection throughout your studies to ensure that you absorb everything optimally and you pass your series of exams and get certified. So go to primalhealthcoach.com/Brad to enjoy a very special limited time. And I'm not kidding. This is a big time discount just for you. 25% off your tuition. A fantastic premium offer at primalhealthcoach.com/Brad for the most comprehensive fitness course you can ever find.
You know, a lot of the, you know, everybody we work with now works with our performance psychologist, Simon. He, if you're a cycling fan, he's the sports psychologist for Team BMC, who are racing the Tour de France as we're speaking right now. You know, so, you know, he's a fabulously funny guy, and he's brilliant and different from any other psychologist you've ever met. But so that's really the key, is it's working with people to understand why they're doing what they're doing. Why are you doing the volumetric exercise you're doing? Why are you eating the way that you're eating? You know, how can you change that? You know, what is it that will allow you to change those things? So I think that's where we're seeing the most success. And, you know, so, but it usually means that what I suggest in terms of the person doing, that's not the hard part. The hard part is, you know, working with them to create these beneficial sort of long-term habits. So bringing Simon into our program and working with him, that's definitely where we've been seeing the best additional success recently.
Love that. The missing piece to the puzzle, yeah. The three-legged stool. And it's great working backwards from the answer, because I think right now, especially with the exchange of information in the world, most of us know what to do. And you're so great. I think I'm going to finish with your list of five things here, because this is your tips for optimum health. And they're so simple, and everyone's going to nod their head. Let's get a little reminder anyway and get that motivation going. But it is so simple. And then the complexity comes with our excuses and our patterns and our rationalizations, or who knows why, but digital entertainment, the lure of that, because number one on Tommy's list is sleep enough. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can give me some color commentary as we hit these. Sleep enough, so simple. Why can't we do it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess there's two parts. You know, people saying, oh, I'm too busy to sleep. I've got stuff to do. I need to get up early and do this thing. And, you know, then they're busy at night for whatever reason. They're working late. They've got to get home and eat and do all this kind of stuff. So there's that part of it. And then there's also there's all these things that we're doing that are sabotaging our sleep. So, you know, exposure to bright light at night, or exercise late at night, or, you know, getting stressed about things late at night, still checking work emails, or, you know, not having a dark enough room to sleep in, or, you know, other things like noises that are going to keep you awake, and or a room that's too hot to sleep in. So, you know, we're in Seattle, there's no AC. It's kind of hot in the middle of summer in the night. It's sort of like 80 degrees in the bedroom. So we have like multiple fans kind of blowing just to kind of get it cool in there, because that's a huge part of sleep, is body temperature coming down. So all these different reasons, both sort of external and internal, really seem to be sabotaging our sleep. But again, they're not that difficult to fix. It just requires you to, you know, sort of focus on it a little bit.
Number one, sleep enough. Number two, I like how you grouped all these together in move more. Mm-hmm. Lift, walk, sprint, jump, climb. So it sounds like we're talking about workouts and general movement together.
Yeah, definitely. And when I was trying to, a few years ago, I tried to build this kind of thought process for how we should structure movement for longevity. And it was kind of, it was the upside down movement pyramid. So basically, and the reason it was upside down is because you started at the top, which is kind of like the fat bit. And as you added layers, obviously it gets more pointy at the bottom and it becomes more unstable. So that's why it was upside down. And the first one is just sit less, you know, spend less time sitting. So standing or crouching or whatever. So like, you know, I spend most of my time, you know, at a standing desk, but I'll be in lots of different positions while I work during the day. So just sit less and then walk more. So like I talked about the Hadza, they spend 2 to 3 hours a day walking. You might not be able to do that much walking, but regularly just, you know, every hour, a 5 to 10 minute walk has been shown to have a huge number of benefits in lots of studies. So just walk more. And then you should lift stuff. Like you should go and lift heavy things. And that could be your own body weight. If it's off, you know, the limb of a tree, or do some push-ups or squats, or, you know, lift some weights in the gym, or rocks, or it can be literally anything you want to lift. It doesn't matter what the implement is. And that's because strength is so important for long-term health. And then sprints. If you're doing brisk walking, then you've gotten some low level aerobic work in there. And then you're going to add some short sprints for that, you know, that top end, that glycolytic work. You're going to work the other energy systems again. And you also get cardiovascular benefits from sprinting, and they can be super easy. And they don't need to be, you can do them on a bike or whatever implement that you have, and they don't need to be sort of put you any risk of any injury or anything like that. You know, anybody can sprint, and it's, again, it's all relative to your current fitness level. And then if you're doing all of that and you have the time and the capacity and the space and the health to do it, then I add like the chronic cardio, like the long biking and, you know, cycling and swimming and, you know, running, all that kind of stuff. Because once you've done all the other stuff, you know, the additional health benefits from that kind of exercise, you know, there is some, absolutely, but, you know, you don't need as much of it. So that's always like, if I was structuring something for somebody who wanted to be healthy for as long as possible, that's the final piece of the puzzle. If you're doing everything else, like eating enough and sleeping enough and you're doing your strength training and some sprints and all that kind of stuff.
It's often the first piece,
yeah,
instead of the final.
Yeah.
Sleep enough, move more. Number three, reduce stress. Meditate, do yoga, nap, spend time outdoors.
Yeah, and so that's again, I guess one in that description, which I've done previously, I guess I don't expand enough on the fact that stress is subjective. So you are exposed to things that can make you stress, but you don't have to make them stress. So it's kind of the there's a book called The Myth of Stress that goes over some of that. So again, it's, you know, can you recalibrate how you respond to certain things? And, you know, there's definitely, so I just think about conversations that I have with my wife, and one of us will get like really stressed about this something, and the other will be like, why is this stressing you out? It's fine, don't worry about it. So, you know, if you can start to recalibrate the way that you respond to potential stresses, that's going to be super important. But then equally finding ways to just, you know, focus internally and reduce some of those stresses. So meditation is great. Yoga is great. Just being outside, like, but barefoot on the grass, you know, there's just some amazing things that happen. You know, sunlight, you know, we haven't mentioned sunshine yet, and bright light during the day, which is just super, super important again for circadian rhythm. And sun is really important. I mean, people think about vitamin D, but also nitric oxide and, you know, all these other great things that come from being exposed to sunlight. So all of that can then help reduce, you know, our total stress burden.
I think when we're most stressed is when we need these the most and we're least likely to do it.
Yeah.
And I've found times in my life where I somehow just had to force myself to get out. It might've been because the dogs need an outing and you don't realize that you need the outing too. You're just like, oh, I better stop working because these dogs are going crazy, chewing up my couch. I'm going to go take them out. And wow, did I get a positive benefit from that? Even though I'm not thinking because I'm too stressed to think about how I need to balance my day.
Yeah, so the dog is my favorite health tool You need
a whole show about that the podcast,
yeah.
right?
Because they need to go outside. When you need to go outside, you know, they need to, you can eat when they eat. You know, they have, you know, usually healthy eating patterns. And if you're a good dog owner, they'll eat an ancestrally appropriate diet, which should be meat based. You know, they are obligate carnivores in general. And they love to play. So, I mean, I was on another podcast talking about this recently, you know, like the importance of play in humans. And the way that I make sure that I get my play in is that I play, I wrestle with my dogs. I have two, you know, 70 pound dogs. You can get down on the floor and wrestle. And it's just one of those things. I don't count it as exercise, but stress reduction, movement, I'm outside, you know, all that kind of stuff comes into play just by having a dog. So yeah, they can do all kinds of great stuff.
We definitely got some play in before we hit record. Yeah. When Bowen saw me at the door, I'm like, what's up, playa? I mean, a white boxer is one of the most beautiful animals of all time.
Yeah.
And they fuck the AKC if they don't recognize, the white boxer.
That's crazy. So people don't have, generally have them just because they're not recognized by the American Kennel Club, which is crazy. I mean,
you know why though?
No.
It's because they would win Westminster every year. It would be unfair to all other breeds. It'd be like best in show. Once again, is the white boxer. Yeah. Who can compete?
they go to Crufts and wipe the floor with everybody. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Number four, socialize with an S. Love it. Put down the iPhone. Have fun with friends and family. Have sex. As you say, have sex. Borat, think this very funny. Okay. Number four.
I think we've kind of covered a lot of that, both from, you know, there's the
we talked about the different positions.
Oh, so yeah.
We covered that.
Yeah. Brad took some photos. They'll be in the show notes. Just in terms of the mental health aspects and then also the physiology, you know, socializing, human contact, touching other people, hugging people, having sex, like it's just this. So many amazing things that come, and we can like make it scientific. You know, there's the studies that exist. I could talk about the studies that do that, but just in reality, we know how much better we feel when somebody gives us a hug. We know how much better we feel usually after we've had, you know, had sex or some kind of contact or interaction with another human who we love. So that stuff is just incredibly important. And it's one of those things. It's often the missing piece. When somebody has their diet dialed in and their exercise dialed in and their supplement stack dialed in and all that kind of stuff, that's the missing piece, which is often the case. And I'm just going to quickly go back. I forgot to mention something in the stress thing. The way you approach your work is super important. And we may have talked, I've had somebody on our podcast, a friend of mine called James Hewitt, who talks about the cognitive middle gear, which is basically constantly task switching, like email to Facebook, to doing this other thing at work, to doing this other thing. And it's essentially the same as that gray zone of training around lactate threshold that we talked about, which is like super tough on the gut. It's super tough to recover from, but actually the training benefit is also minimal. But that's where, you know, the cognitive effects are also the cognitive load. You can think about it the same. So like there's the high cognitive load, which is like your sprint training, which you want to do in short bursts. And that's like super focused on one task. You get that task done and then it's done. Whereas like the low cognitive load stuff, which is kind of like your aerobic math training. And that's when you're kind of, you know, sitting around kind of letting stuff marinate, kind of, you know, you're going to be maximally creative, you know, stuff, you know, ideas are going to come to you just sort of like, you know, out for a walk, just kind of thinking. We don't spend very much time doing that. We need to spend more time doing that. But then we spend all our time in that cognitive middle gear, just constantly switching between tasks, never having stuff, you know, finished on time, constantly worrying about all these things you're having to do, multiple tabs open on the computer, all this kind of stuff going on at the same time. That's how we work nowadays. And that's where we get, where we are the least productive, but it's the most mentally taxing, just like, you know, that really hard threshold training. So restructuring the way you work is a big part of the stress piece. So I didn't mention that, so I wanted to rewind.
Oh gosh, you're hurting my feelings, man. That was huge. I mean, I find myself in that crappy middle gear.
Yeah.
And I do think it's more stressful and more exhausting to go back and forth.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna set a commitment right now. What about you guys, listeners? Let's do this. I mean, forget that cognitive middle gear and shut the email off, work on your peak performance task for the day, and then go back into multitasking mode. Oh my God, brilliant insight. I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
Number five is eat real food.
Yeah, it's as simple as that. I think there's so much infighting in all the different spheres of people trying to improve the way we eat. You know, we have the plant-based guys, we have the paleo guys, we have the low carb and keto guys, you know, who argue, you know, then the you're talking about the amount of carbs versus fat versus protein, and you know how all of that is going to make a big difference to our health. And in reality, I think that the benefits of one is really minor compared to just not eating processed food. Like most of the like detrimental effects of the Western diet come from food processing. So that can be the carbohydrates and large insulin spikes. It's the vegetable oils. Like I never saw an oily vegetable. Like what on earth do you have to do to get to get oil out of that? You just think about the processing, about those fats that we're not normally exposed to, and you know, a huge number of negative benefits or negative effects associated with that. So once we take out food that required processing to get to where it is, and it's just like real food, 90%+ of the benefit is going to come from that. And so we talked about, you know, if you go really low fat, you know, the plant-based guys are definitely onto something. You just aren't, if you're eating very low fat and it's real food, you know, mainly mainly vegetables and beans and things like that, and you know the you know, and maybe the you know, and potatoes and maybe some rice, and then you know the keto guys are you know are slowly losing the plot as I talk about this, but you know you're not there's no fat in the diet for you to store, and you're also not getting these large insulin spikes because you're eating normal unprocessed carbohydrates. So when those guys see health benefits and they see weight loss, you know, it makes perfect sense. Like, so you can do that by going keto and low carb, and that's great, and we do that a lot. But you can also go the other way, and we've done that too. And yeah, there's the risk of certain nutrient deficiencies if you go plant-based, and that's which are easy to come if you add back either small amounts of certain animal foods or supplements. So you can kind of go either way, but the most important thing is just eating real food. And if you take that processed stuff out of the diet, you know, most of the benefits are going to come from that.
Dr. Tommy Wood, killing it. What a great finish. We could just settle down a little bit, quit fighting, lower our cortisol. Thanks for spending the time. Great show. Hope to get with you again. We got more to talk about. We're just opening the can of worms here, but go to nourishbalancethrive.com and take that free quiz and see what they're all about. I think you get a pretty good exposure to what you guys are doing there.
Yeah.
Great service. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
This is Brad. I want to tell you about my life-changing acquisition of a personal home-use sauna. I have a 6x6 barrel sauna in my backyard, ready-made heat therapy, a fabulous unit from almost heaven. Check out their website. You can very affordably order your own sauna for installation in your backyard or garage and have a sauna experience, the fabulous health benefits accruing from exposure to hot temperatures. Get that sweat going. These are beautiful traditional dry barrel saunas where you splash the water on the rocks, go in there and relax. It's become a social centerpiece at my home, people traveling from far and wide to come check out the barrel sauna, turn the dial or set the timer and walk in to 200 degrees in the Caribbean seas. For some reason, people like to come to the sauna more than my cold tub. Go figure. Check out almostheaven.com and their beautiful natural wood designs, and pretty soon, surprisingly affordable, you will be in the home sauna business. Let's talk about ancestral supplements. If you're into ancestral health, primal paleo, keto, you know the importance of consuming these unique agents contained in bone marrow, in the nose-to-tail organ meats, liver, kidney, all that stuff, the great bone broth benefits. Well, how's it going? For me, since years ago when Dr. Kate Shanahan asserted the importance of these wonderful nutritional benefits that you can't get elsewhere, not too good. I don't know how to cook a liver or a kidney, but now your problems are solved forever when you go to AncestralSupplements.com, a wonderful company filled with people who are living the dream, walking their talk, and bottling up the purest, cleanest sources of grass-fed organ meats, kidney, liver, bone marrow, all in these wonderful capsules. I dump them in my smoothie every day. I'm healthy. I don't have to worry. It's an incredible dietary boost. And this is so different from swallowing a bunch of those synthetic vitamins and those giant bottles from the big box stores. Highly questionable health practice. This stuff is the real deal. Grass-fed organ meats, pure as can be, AncestralSupplements.com.